Hey, Dave here from the Breakfast with Manny podcast, which comes from when my co-host Emmanuel, also known as Manny, and I used to meet regularly for breakfast. When we were discussing the shifting landscape of manhood, mostly by sharing our experiences and our struggles, as well as my coaching courses and my entrepreneurial experience, we realized many men could benefit from discussing these topics. So Breakfast with Manny is going to explore the unseen patterns that sabotage men from realizing their potential, healing, and getting the life, sex, career, and health they want, leading to a healthy masculine life. All right, welcome everyone. Breakfast with Manny. And as you can see, we have a third person with us for the first time ever. Special guest, Christian Roy, is here. And I said the French version.
So yes, that's kind perfect.
Cool. Yeah. So Christian's with us. We're going to dive in with Christian a bit on many subjects. Before we get started, I am going to say a few words. But Christian, we've known each other for over 30 years, I guess.
And, yep.
I was a little guy from Winnipeg who had probably a mullet. And we've both come a long way.
Absolutely.
And, I couldn't think of a better guy to have as our first guest. And people are going to know why very, very quickly. Manny's here again. Manny, you ready to go?
Very happy to be here. We have a lot of questions. We'll see how long this takes. Hopefully, we don't take all of your night, Christian, but we'll definitely have some questions. So
yeah. I'm here. Ready, and there's no question you cannot ask.
Okay,
cool. So
well, that's, yeah,
that's good to know.
Yep. Yeah. So the title of the episode is very meaningful. It's the power of I am not okay to you're not alone, and it really refers to, we talked about it in a previous episode, a lot of guys suffer in silence. Mm-hmm. A lot of guys struggle with vulnerability. Vulnerability makes us a little squishy. We feel naked, right? But we don't realize, like, vulnerability is the path to connection. I've never learned a greater lesson in my life than in the last few years. And, you know, even you and I, we've deepened our connection over the last few years. But, you know, by saying sometimes, like, oh, how you doing? I'm not okay.
Yeah.
And when you realize you're not alone, it's a huge thing. So, you know, our ego wants to protect us. So it puts walls up and we want to look kind of perfect. And, you know, a lot of guys want to be, you know, we kind of compete with each other almost and those kinds of things. You know, my first experience with sharing vulnerably was a men's group where, I mean, I felt so ashamed of myself. It was after Jenny and I split.
Yeah.
You know, and Rob and I split, you know, that story, and wasn't feeling very good. And to be in a room full of guys and just share vulnerably, it changed my life. Another point I wanted to make is shame is a big thing. Mm-hmm. A lot of guys feel ashamed, and shame is the lowest vibrating emotion that's out there. So when you're in shame, you can't move, you can't do anything. And it really does.
It paralyzes you.
Paralyzed. And we'll talk about that. So, you know, these connections can be a bit intense, but they're so meaningful. And, you know, I'll tell a quick, really quick story. I was at yoga one day and I'd seen this guy. I must have seen him 20 times. Same conversation every time. Hey, man, how's it going? Oh, good. You? Good. One day, I don't know why, I just decided to say the truth. And I said, yeah, I'm struggling a bit. And he goes, oh, me too. And I couldn't believe it. It was the same issue. And he actually had some really interesting points about some of the struggles I was going through. And all of a sudden, here I am with this guy, this stranger who's no longer a stranger. So yeah. It was kind of cool. And so, you know, why is it so hard to admit we're struggling? You know, Christian, your story is so compelling, and I think everyone needs to hear it. Mm-hmm. Luckily, you've published it already, so it's not a big secret. But yeah, we'll just turn it over to you. I'm just curious, like, you know, why do you think, what's your thoughts on maybe healthy masculinity and vulnerability? We're trying to really keep things in the healthy masculinity space.
Yeah.
So maybe some initial thoughts on that.
I mean, initial thoughts is like we're carrying a lot of baggage from previous generations, and you know, we were talking earlier, you know, if you go back 50 years ago, there was two categories of people. There were the crazy people and the not crazy people. And, you know, it was one big garbage can of a diagnosis. You were crazy, and whether you had, you know, PTSD, depression, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, you are part of the crazy people. And actually, you were in an institution with crazy people where oftentimes, you know, there was little differentiation between what the underlying condition was. And so it's something that you didn't talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Families who had someone who was crazy, they would either hide them, they would be put in an institution, and you would just kind of forget about it. So I think first thought is there's so much to change, and we've come a long way in the last 50 years. There's still a lot of work to be done.
Sure.
But we've come a long way. So, but it's not over. And conversations such as these, I think, are helpful.
Yeah, for sure. So, like, maybe you could tell us a little bit about your story when things took a turn into being challenging.
Yeah. So, actually, I had two major episodes of depression. So, the first one was in 2000, and that's when I was going through a divorce. So, I'd been married, had three kids. Very quickly, I was married to a wonderful woman who I'm still very much friends and interact with today. But our marriage wasn't kind of working, and so I was going through that period, and actually had left the house, came back, and then I was kind of struggling. So that was an episode, but that wasn't like it wasn't the blue sky. There was a big underlying condition, and so I saw a psychotherapist. I went on antidepressant medication and got out of it rather quickly. Okay. And over the course of the next 17 years, it was a blip.
Yeah.
And something that, that happened, but it was a freak coincidence, and you could understand the circumstances. And so so I kind of put it behind me, and if I look back, I never really dealt with the kind of the core issues behind it and the underlying conditions.
Yep.
So fast forward 2017, I was a partner in a business in the communications industry. We had been very successful. So I'd been there for about 5 years. We grew the business like crazy. We actually sold the business at the end of 2016. And there was a 5-year period in the contract where we had to stay. And there was a big financial incentive to stay and grow the business. And so there was five partners, but actually after that period, there was four partners. And as soon as that started, well, guess what happens? Like any other business, the wind changed direction, and all of a sudden there was a strong wind to our face and not at our back.
Yeah.
And so the division I was managing, I mean, it was all a team thing, but I was responsible for that division. We started to struggle. Like, January was not good. February was not good. March was not good. And all of a sudden, what became a big issue for me was that, oh my God, like for the first time in my life, I have an opportunity for me, but also for partners to deliver on a business. And I just made this such a big thing. And then I started, so results are not good.
Right.
So I start not to sleep well. Yeah. I have no energy. I don't eat properly. I stop exercising. I just think about the business and just started to spiral. And then what became the big gorilla for me was that I'm failing. It's one thing to fail myself.
You're failing everyone else.
Now I'm failing three other people who have been working so hard and all that. Now, that's all happening in my head, because in their head is like, no, this is a team.
Yeah.
They would even say, if you hadn't been with us, we wouldn't have been able to even sell the business, and get this kind of deal. And so they were very supportive. But in my mind, I started going into downward spiral. And that lasted a number of months. And anyway, so that's kind of the context of my depression.
I was wondering, Christian, if we just go back quickly to that first episode you had, because you said it was kind of like the underlying thing that you never maybe fully went into that eventually decided to bite back. But a lot of people sometimes wonder, you need to be in certain circumstances to go through this. Were you established at that time, you would say, financially in your life when that hit? Or were you, other aspects of your life were also kind of like
flowing? Well, listen. So 2000, I'm let's say middle management. So I'm starting to get into higher levels of management, but not established. I have a 8-year-old, a 6-year-old, and a 4-year-old. Financially, I mean, everything is relative, but we're doing okay. But financially, there was a lot of stress. So there was a number of big things happening, and the big one being the separation. And then, I never thought that I would go through a divorce. Like my parents never divorced. So he grew up and it was like, I was going to get married. I was going to have kids. And, you know,
that's it. Yeah.
So that was a big one for me to deal with at the time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but what I, the part that like, I was really, once I accepted to go on antidepressants, to me, even though I saw a psychotherapist, a psychologist, it was like, I want the meds to make me feel better and then I'm going to be okay because this is happening to me and, you know, and I'll take medication and I'll be okay with it. There was no desire to kind of
go deeper
and try to really like, what's the lesson here? And really, so as soon as I started feeling better, I just wanted to kind of focus back on work and put things back into place.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because one of the tenets of our podcast and sort of my coaching work and what I've been looking to adjust with my life is, and it's super hard. It's unbelievable how we don't want to go deeper. Mm. We don't really want to go inside, because I got to tell you, that's where the pain is.
Absolutely.
And it's deathly pain. But we'll talk about this in another episode, Manny. But one of the spiritual books that I read that I really is amazing, called The Untethered Soul, talks about, one of the chapters is called Pain, the Price of Freedom. Mm. And in order for us to be really, truly free inside, you know, so the drugs treat the symptoms and that's fine and it can get you out of it. But, you know, I just think it's really interesting, this inner work that a lot of, especially guys, right? We're like, no.
Yeah. It brings the expression, no pain, no gain to a completely different level.
Yeah.
And
interesting.
Yeah, I'll talk a little bit later about, remind me to talk about my mental boot camp in the second.
Okay. Yep. That sounds good. I did want to ask you, like, so one of the other things I talk about a lot is clarify and verify. Like, words mean different things to different people. Like, when I hear depressed, Manny might hear something else. What did it look like, the major episode, when you really started to slip? What did that look like?
Yeah. So one thing I want to say is that, you know, there is a clinical difference and differentiation between burnout and depression.
Yeah.
And I'm not a psychologist, and I mean, my story isn't of one, so I'm not even going to go there. Okay. I'll just talk about what my experience was. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what it was is, you know, when I was in kind of the darkest place of the depression, there's a pain, the pain of depression. The pain of depression is a real pain. And, you know, it's my pattern was, and it's quite typical, but not everybody's like that. But the worst was the mornings.
Okay.
The mornings were the worst. And as the day progressed, I got a little bit better in the afternoon and significantly better in the evening. And I remember there was actually like a sweet spot. A little place, a little space where I could, for sometimes it was just seconds or minutes where I felt good. It was just before I fell asleep.
Okay.
I was exhausted and I would just fall asleep and then I would feel better. But then in the next morning, I would wake up and sometimes it would take, you know, 1, 2, 3 seconds, maybe 4 seconds. And I would wake up and I was like, okay, is the depression still there?
You're looking for it.
Well, I'm looking for it or for it not to be there. Mm-hmm. And then this pain, and it was pain that I felt.
Right in your chest. Eh?
In my chest, like I would say close to my heart.
Yep.
This dull pain that just engulfed me.
Okay.
And then I was like, I wanted to sleep because when I was asleep, I didn't feel that way, but I couldn't fall back asleep. And even if I woke up exhausted, I couldn't fall back asleep. So there was definitely that pain. And then sometimes I would stay in bed. Sometimes I would just, you know, get the energy to get out of bed and go downstairs, turn the TV on and be on the couch. And the TV was not to, because nothing interested. Like I was not interested in anything.
Yep.
You know, I've always been passionate about like watching the news or watching series or like, or, you know, the one thing that I can always rely on is old Seinfeld episodes.
There you go, yeah.
Nothing. There was nothing. And so I would just be on the couch. TV was on just to make noise in the background. And then I could stay there for an hour, 2 hours without really moving. And then I, you know, get the energy to get up. I was never hungry, so I didn't eat. And the one thing I would often do is I would just put some clothes on, maybe some shorts, put my running shoes on, and go for either a walk or a run.
Okay.
And just kind of, and I would run and run and run and run forever.
Couldn't get away from
it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that's kind of how it represented itself to me, or presented itself to me.
Yeah.
Christian, did people notice around you when that started to kick in those two occasions? How did that manifest around your circle? Yeah.
So at the beginning, you're pretty good. You're pretty good at lying and pretending, and you in the first few days, few weeks, you can actually fake it. And you can pretend, you know, very well. Now, the first people that you start pretending with is like in my case, my wife. I would pretend more with my kids because I knew that I didn't want them to feel that I was not okay.
Yep.
And so eventually people notice, and people around you notice, and so the closest people noticed earlier. And then, you know, there's layers of it. But I, you know, so, for example, I stayed at work for a number of weeks while I was in pretty bad depression. I would go into my office, turn the computer on, and I could look at that screen without doing anything for hours.
Wow.
Just be pretending that I was at a computer. But people told me after, we would walk by your office and we would see you, we would see it in your eyes.
Nobody home.
Yeah.
You're disconnected. So did people start telling you before you decided to accept kind of that reality, or you already knew?
I knew.
You knew, yeah. But it was, okay.
I definitely knew. I was the first one to know.
You knew.
I knew before my wife knew. Mm-hmm. I was by far the first person to know. Just hoping that maybe through my activities or that it would, you know, go away, and it would just kind of, I would be able to kind of pull myself out of it. Not, I guess the first step is to snap out of it, because there's the whole concept of snapping out of it.
Yeah.
But then after that, it becomes almost like wishful thinking. I hope that this is going to go away. And and then the more you pretend, by the way, the more it takes energy.
Right.
And just.
Well, you know, that actually brings up an interesting point in general, and I want to hear about your work experience in a minute, because one of the hallmarks of corporate life, pretty much, not every company, but we have an image, right? Like, we maintain a certain image, and that takes energy to not be our authentic self. So I'm curious, in the end, when did you start to open up to your work partners and colleagues, and how was it received?
So interestingly, one of the one of my partners, Mark,
mm-hmm.
He and I had always stayed in touch, and him and I met each other when I went through my first phase. Right. It was almost a coincidence, but he was aware that, you know, I'd gone through that, and I remember, like, you know, 3, 4, 5 years after, we would reconnect, and he would ask me, "Are you okay? Have you that thing that happened never came back?" And as a matter of fact, before we became partners, we had this conversation. I said, "No, like, it was a one off," and so what was your question again?
My question was, how was it? How was it received at work? So, and when were you able, because we'll talk in a minute, a big part of what we want to talk about is when you started sharing.
Yeah.
Because this isn't an episode of really on depression. It's about vulnerability and how that vulnerability can be received. So how were you able to sort of share with work? How did they react? And did it go as well or better than you thought?
Yeah. So the thing is, for people in my life, in my workplace, I'm the crisis management guy. My reputation was this is the guy you want when things start getting rocky, because he stays really calm and cool. And so my partner started to notice that all of a sudden I was no longer that calm guy when the results were coming in, and I was kind of freaking out a bit. And so we had kind of conversations where Mark, for example, would say, listen, it's just, you know, this is just a phase. We're going to turn this around and all that. But he kept on seeing that I was not reacting in my normal way. Mm-hmm. And so I don't remember, but I think we had a conversation where he kind of said, you're like, this is not you. Like, you know, are you okay? And I remember at one point saying, I'm not okay. Like, I'm like, this is, you remember what happened like 17 years ago? This is starting to feel the same way. Okay. And so this is how, now this was the best environment. Like I was extremely lucky to be in an environment where my three partners were completely open about this, different levels of understanding, but always super, like, if you need to take time off. And as a matter of fact, there were two, so once in June and once in September, where in June they said, you know, why don't you take some time off? I had a meeting in Vancouver, actually. I was going to lead a 3-day strategic planning meeting in Vancouver. And I was in such a low point I didn't know how I was going to get to Vancouver. Like, forget about leading the meeting. I couldn't see myself getting on a plane. Going to Vancouver, at the airport, take a cab, make myself to the hotel. Like to me, I actually did it.
I went because
I said, listen, let me just get that meeting out.
And then I'll...
out of the way, and then I'll take some time off, which I did. I did the meeting. Like, I don't know how I made it through that meeting, but I came back and I took some time off. But very quickly, what happened is that I started to feel like, oh no, I'm not at work. So not only am I not performing at work, now I'm not even showing up at work anymore. Right. And that became, and it's very, it varies from individuals. Some people taking time off is what they need. Some people getting off work actually makes it worse. Mm-hmm. So I came back after but it was always them kind of saying, if you need to take some time. And then in September, when I continued to spiral throughout the summer, at the end of a meeting, Mark took me away. He said to the other guys, hey, you know, Christian, stay behind. And he said, okay, time out.
You need help.
And it's not, I'm not asking you if you need to take time off. I'm telling you, you're taking time off. Yeah. You're going to go back to your office, pack your things. And, you know, whether you leave 3 days, a week, a month, a year, 5 years, you need to take the time. And this is not working for you. And stop worrying. Like, we can manage this. We're going to manage this. You need to take care of yourself. Yeah. He had already spoken with my wife. And he said, by the way, once you leave the office, all of your connections, you're all cut. So don't even try to read your email. Everything is being redirected. We're handling this. Mm-hmm. So now you handle yourself. You take care of yourself. We'll be there. And so.
Did that initially feel like a relief or what is going on? Like, I don't want this.
No, so a great question. Actually, it was a tremendous relief.
Good to know.
Because it relieved some pressure. And then I remember getting into the car and feeling so much better. Mm-hmm. And then got home, had a decent evening, and then the next morning it was back.
Okay. Wow. Well, you know, that raises something I want to bring up, which is a big thing in all career. Like, doesn't matter if it's guys or anyone. But, you know, obviously this podcast is for guys for certain reasons. And I've noticed, you know, this push through mentality, right? Mm. And we feel if we can't push through. Now, you know, we played a lot of sports. You know, I played a lot of sports where I was like, I don't care about my separated shoulder. I don't care about my broken foot. You know, I'm going to just push through. And I think our parents' generation was very into that, right? Like, it's nope, keep going. Did you notice that in the back of your mind or as a factor in the failure feeling and that kind of stuff?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, you know, in 2000, I was able to fake through the whole thing.
You faked the whole thing.
I faked the whole thing because I had actually left my company, joined a little startup. It wasn't working well at the startup. And so the company I'd left, 3 months later, I went back there. So I was able to kind of, I went back, other than the fact that I had lost a ton of weight. People said, oh, you know, I'm running a lot and I'm, you know, preparing for a marathon. And, that's a lot of weight and all that. But so nobody knew. As a matter of fact, it took 17 years. I went back to give a conference that company.
Yeah.
Not to name it, it's Pfizer.
Okay.
And I went to give a conference about you know, my experience with depression. Mm-hmm. And people were like, oh, really? That happened to you? We never noticed that. Yeah. So, But you do want to, it is the mentality of trying to push through. And I think there's some circumstances where if you catch it in time, and we can talk about this later, what does that mean, catch it in time? And I think you can do things and potentially go over the hump, maybe not. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is, you know, you're talking about you played hockey and you know, separated shoulder and bum knee and all that. So if you can do it and manage the pain,
right, the pain,
you can kind of push through. But in this case, the part that's broken is your brain.
Right.
Your brain is broken. And so you can't even the concept of pushing through, which comes from your brain, if you're playing hockey with a separated shoulder, your brain is okay. It feels the pain, but now it's the computer is broken. Mm-hmm. So all of that makes it so much more complex.
Yeah.
And it's not something that, you know, we hear about, you know, I don't understand why he can't or why she can't
snap.
Get over it. Just you give yourself a coup de pied dans le derrière. Just kick your bum and emotion follow motion, which in certain circumstances is true, but when your brain is broken, you can't just snap out of it. It doesn't happen.
Did anyone ever question the way you were feeling? Did that ever happen, that someone was like, I don't really believe in that kind of stuff, or you should just... Did that ever happen?
Did anyone give you the get over it?
Yeah.
Not during, certainly not in my face. Okay. And you have to know that the Christian, like in good, like on top of my game, in working order, was not the type of guy that you would say something like snap out of it.
True.
So, but I did have that happen to me later, where I was having lunch with a client actually who was a bit of a friend, and it's after I... Is this a good time to talk about this?
Yeah.
So after I had come out of it, and I was in a much, you know, I was actually in great spirits, and he invited me to lunch because there was a challenge he had that he wanted to discuss. But we started to talk because after I got out of my depression, I wrote a blog and I told my story, and he told me, he said, you know, by the way, I read your story, and he said, you know, it's had an impact. I'm starting to think, because I believe, or I used to believe, that, you know, it's like anything else. You got to push through, and you got to talk to yourself, and you got to snap out of it. You just can't stay there. And he said, you know, your story kind of made me think, and I'm reconsidering my beliefs and all that. And so we ended that conversation. I said, well, thank you for being truthful and keeping an open mind about it. So then we go on to talk about why he wanted to have lunch. And the reason why he wanted to have lunch is he had a problem with one of his employees, and he was managing that person. And we went on, what's the problem and all that? Well, did you talk to that person? Did you give them, you know, your expectations and all that. He said, yeah, I can't, yeah. But it wasn't really, really clear. And then I said, okay, so you told her that, and then she did this after. So did you follow up and follow through right away? He said, well, you know, it's not always easy. I said, so after the end of that conversation, I said, in a very sarcastic way, but subtle, I said, you know what? Thanks for having this conversation, because I always thought that people who didn't know how to manage employees like that were just weak people, and they just didn't know, like, isn't it obvious what you should have been doing? And so, but this, because I know you're not a weak person and I know you're a good manager, I'm happy we had this conversation. So now I'm going to rethink my belief in bad people manager. And then he kind of went, okay, I got the message. Yeah. Well, I said, you know?
Well, it's funny because we talked about it in the pregame meal a little bit, and the idea that, you know, when people have something going on up there, we don't treat them the same. Like if someone had a broken leg, you would not expect them to run. Mm. You wouldn't. And so many times we judge people for their incapacities mentally, yeah. Even in relationships, even in business partnerships. When somebody's triggered, we still judge them and we expect them to get it, or we expect them to just snap out of it, as you said.
Yeah.
And that's not the way it works. Like, yeah. It's just not. And I think we can change our expectations around mental health. One thing I wanted to touch on, which is interesting. So when I went through my tumbles, let's say, and you know, I didn't say this earlier, I probably should share it with everybody, and I'd like to share it with you, is that, and I don't even know if I told you this, but, you know, there was a time I run more anxiety than depression. Yeah. And there was a time where my anxiety froze me. Mm. So I did the office, computer up, doing nothing thing. Mm. And I started to just feel so shitty about myself. And that's when a whole host of things started happening. But, you know, because, you know, realizing some of the trauma I went through, I had to create a lot of protection, let's say, and a lot of identity. And, you know, we all have identity. We're all human. My identity was always, you know, a little bit like, you know, top performer, smartest guy in the room, bullshit, big athlete, blah, blah, right? You know, good with women or whatever that garbage was. Because I had just so much going on inside and I was so insecure. I had to build a shell. And what I'm curious about with you is, you know, you had, you know, a thriving business, thriving relationship, great kids, even great relationship with your ex-wife, although I share that with you. We're both proud of that. All the, you know, this identity that you've, is part of, you know, you're a successful guy. You're the devil. Like, and I wonder if some people hit you with like, how can you be depressed? Mm. You know what I mean? Like you, how could you be depressed? Like yeah. You've got it all. And you know, maybe just some words about that. Having it all is not really having it all.
No. And, and the other part of this is, I think there were periods in my life where under the same circumstances, I would have been able to manage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why in April 2017, I was at a week in a weaker state or more vulnerable? I don't know. And I still to this day don't know, because there's some underlying reasons. But what I explained to you was the wave and maybe the size of the wave. But I manage much bigger waves. Right. I mean, right. You know, back in my career in 2004, I was in charge of the Celebrex, Bextra portfolio, yeah. Vioxx withdrawal. Like, so massive crisis management in our industry. And I was right at the center of it. And, you know, some people were like, oh my God, like what? So much stress. And how do you manage? And I'm like, no, everything is cool. And, you know, teamwork, and we just all pitch in. And I was like, so, you know, the analogy I use is that, so maybe you have a 150 amp breaker, and maybe right. You have 250, and maybe I have 80. But if you've got 250 and there's 252 amps going through, your breaker is going to jump, right?
Yeah.
So I it doesn't matter. And someone might have a 2,500 breaker.
Right.
But if there's one more amp going, that breaker is going to jump. So that's my first thing. Everybody's vulnerable. The other thing is the variability of your breaker.
Right. It changes. Yeah.
It changes. And it changes based on things we understand and some things we don't. Things I understand for me is if I exercise well, I eat well, if I sleep well, if I don't abuse alcohol. When I say abuse alcohol, if I don't drink all a ton. Sure. And so there's a number of things that, you know, are part of my recipe to make sure that my breaker, the amps, are as high as they can be. So it fluctuates in time in your life. Yep. And there's elements that I think we don't understand. Why was I more vulnerable in April 2017 than I would have been 5 years earlier or 5 years later? I don't know.
Okay.
Like I said, I know how to make sure that I maximize it, but I don't control everything. And so, you know, bottom line, it was this my final episode of depression or not?
Who knows?
You know, stay tuned.
Yeah, sure. That was another episode, but I really hope not, actually.
Yeah, I hope not. Yeah. But
Christian, you said, you know, going through all of this was, you know, of course, an episode in your life. We can go through things and then live it ourselves, but then there's the option of sharing it after. Mm. And you did quickly say something about, you know, I decided to share my story. How did you go about that?
Yeah. So there's two things that I think drove me if I look back. Well, one of them is the fact that stigma with mental health. And even before I went to depression in 2017, I was like, I believed in the fact that there is a stigma and why can't we talk about this the way we talk about other diseases and cancer and other types of ailments that we go through. So I was sensitive to that. And I thought, okay, I had, you know, 25 years of experience in the healthcare pharma environment. And I was a senior executive in a communications marketing agency. So I'm like, if I can't talk about mental health issues when I'm a healthcare guy in communications, like, who's going to talk about it?
Right.
So I felt like a personal responsibility to stop saying we need to talk about it more. And it's like, well, you lived it, so why don't you need to talk about it? So that's the one thing. The other thing is, so one of the things we did when I came back to work in November 2017, I'd been away for about 3 months. And I spoke with my partners and I said, if you're okay, we're going to do like a town hall.
Yeah.
And that first morning, and I'm going to speak to the people. And trust me, like I'm not going to write a speech. I'm just going to speak with them. Mm-hmm. And so so we gathered the people. There was about 150 people there. And I said, listen, I'm back. Super happy to be back. I went through depression. I think most of you know that, but if you didn't know, I can tell you. I went through a pretty rough patch, suffering through depression. I'm back now. I'm feeling great. I'm super happy to be back. I'm not going to bore you with the details of my story and everything I went through, but if any one of you wants to know more about what I went through, I'd be more than happy to do that. So just book time with me. Is it, if it's for you or for, you know, your wife, your husband, your friend, your mom, your dad, whatever, I'd be more than happy to do it. By the way, I'm in the process of writing my blog, is what I told him at the time. Yeah. And I'll publish that story. And so, and the reason I did that, so I told you about the first, you know, talk about it. The second one was I didn't want to come back and walk on eggshells.
Right,
and have the like the elephant in the room, and so it's like everybody knows. And I said, if you want to talk about it, let's talk about it. This is what happened, and it was kind of within an hour of me being back at work. It was, and people said, "Oh my God, I'm so happy," because I didn't want that's people awesome. To be uncomfortable.
Yeah,
right.
That's a
because
great,
that's the reality. It's like, oh, okay, well, hey. You know, what do you tell the guy? He's been away for 3 months. Like, he's one of the partners. Like, hey, our thing. Like, how are you? You don't know what to say.
So awkward.
Right? So awkward. So whereas now, it was like the cat was out of the bag completely. So those are the two main reasons why I kind of came out.
You know, question for you as well, because I think one of the biggest learnings of my life, and I'll talk about a work example when we get into work. Somebody remind me. But we think being vulnerable is going to result in rejection. I've had the exact opposite experience. I'm curious if you did too, that you were well received not being perfect anymore.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. By like, you know, 99%. And I think the other 1% or the 95 and the other 5%, they mostly, people, if they thought, like, if they still think it's a weakness and all that, at least they didn't come out. And but overwhelmingly, people have said, you know, thank you. And so many people have come to me and said, you know, my mom suffered over a number of years about depression. I never really understood what she felt until I read your blog.
Yeah.
And I read how, because I go into detail about what it felt like. And and they said, at least now I understand. Like, I have a better understanding of what she went through, or what my brother went through, or what my husband's going through. And so overwhelmingly, it was positive. And if there are people out there, we still really, I couldn't care less.
Sure.
I really don't care. No. Like, you, whatever you do in life, you're never going to please 100% of the people. And so that's just one of, you know, a million examples.
Yeah. Cool. I mean, I think that's why we're here, to be honest. I mean, you've known me a long time. I've rumbled, bumbled, and stumbled up and downs like throughout my life, and I've learned a lot, done a lot of work, done a lot of reflection. I did take some chances to go inside and play with that pain, which isn't that much fun, but it's rewarding.
It is.
But I'm sure it was rewarding for you to share this. And I guess, you know, for anybody out there, I guess I would just say it's so important. What I'd like people to get out of this podcast is, please take the permission to tell a friend you're not okay.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll tell you a quick story. I had one of my oldest friends, and I get a bit emotional because the guy, when I got kicked out of my house when I was a kid, when I had my storms at home and my dad, I got booted out like right away. Mm. My dad didn't give me a day to pack. He said I got up in the morning, goes, you're fucking out of here.
Wow.
And he was the family that took me in. And even this guy who's like a brother to me, so he's had some challenges with some health issues.
Yeah.
And it was so ironic. I'm into the universe. But the day, literally the hour, an hour after my father died, he reached out. And I'm like, that's weird. And he reached out to share with me that he was recently suicidal.
Okay.
He said, like, the pain's too much. I can't handle it. And I love this guy so much. Mm. And sometimes we just don't get the chance to remember to tell people. Mm. And I almost lost them. And it was such a great chat, but it all started with him saying, like, I'm fucking struggling, you know? Mm. And I think, especially for men, you know, it does feel pretty good to be the strong guy. I know I've been that guy at times, calm in the storm, the harder things get, the better I am. Mm. But sometimes you just got to ask for help.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And everybody struggles at one point.
Yeah.
There's not a single person out there who's humming all the time. And so, you know, it's just about creating that safe space.
Yeah.
And especially if you're the person who can be counted on, you know, but if just for that person to say, hey guys, you know, I know I've been the strong person, but right now I'm not doing well.
Yeah. It's my turn.
Yeah. And it's just, when you think about it, like, it's a normal human thing, and it's human. It is human, because I don't care. And the other thing is, we never know, right? Because we're all good at playing it. In spite of breaking down barriers, we want to pretend, or at least we want to feel like we're on top of things. So we play the games, but you never know how people
You don't know
struggle.
How people are doing. The other thing I see all the time with some of my clients in coaching, social media can be really difficult because people put their best face on, right? And, you know, it's funny. there was a woman who I knew was sleeping with another guy who wrote on her Facebook, like, to my husband, the best husband ever. I'm like, well, you can't be that good. You're sleeping with someone else. But when we compare ourselves to social media, As they say in Buddhism, comparison is the thief of joy. Be very careful what you when you do that, because typically we compare areas of success that are surface.
Yeah.
So we see someone who's got the car and the beautiful wife, and then we're like, aw. And those are sometimes people that we hear commit suicide.
Yeah.
Right? And it really is happiness and fulfillment is an inside job. Mm. And we see people trying to sort of, you know, keep up with the Joneses or put on their social media like, everything's the best thing ever. And you're right. I just think it's important for us, especially for men who tend to suffer in silence a bit more. I do think women can be a bit better at being vulnerable and connected. Some men can struggle with that. Mm-hmm. But if you can create, everybody out there, if you can find a safe space, another guy that you can share deep things with,
yeah.
and a guy who he'll know, like whether you just need a hug, an I love you, or a kick in the ass. And yeah. you can have that place. You know what I mean?
I like that point. I like that point. And yeah. I just wanted to mention, because Christian, you did mention before, kind of like that change in generations of like before having these two groups. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the suggestion before the tip was like, suck it up. Everything's fine. I find it extremely courageous that you shared that, because that's part of the awareness that's making today a change. Dave, you just brought a really good point on how you can start, if you're in that currently in that situation, how you can start talking to someone. Any tips on how to bring that courage or how to get that courage to want to either share it or say, okay, you know what? I'm not okay. Because I've spoken to people who told me later I wasn't doing good. That was before. Yeah. And I'm out of it now and I never knew about it. So I'm curious.
Yeah, I mean, I think to me it's the concept of... You know, if we can create as many safe spaces or create a safe space
yeah.
in as many places. And I think it's, first of all, if you share, if you yourself, so if I tell Dave, you know, hey, I'm struggling, this is not a good period for me or whatever. And so chances are that if Dave at one point,
right.
he'll
reciprocate.
He'll reciprocate just because he feels like I'm not going to be judged because right. Christian went through something like that. So I think by talking about it, you can create a space for someone to be there. The other is don't assume. Like once in a while, you know, I'll say, hey, how are you doing? I'm great. And I'll go, why?
That's like your follow-up question.
Yeah, why are you great? Why, yeah. Are you really great? And and kind of, you know, I think humor, you can use humor in anything.
All the time.
Right?
Yeah.
And so I think those are ways to kind of do it. Just validate, especially the people who are close around you. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you'll see symptoms, not always. So, you know. We play games and we kind of masquerade it, but sometimes you'll see. And so when you see that, just go reach out. Kind of, yeah, you look like you're not having a great day or is something bothering you? And I would do that, especially after I came back. And if I'd see someone in a conversation, I'd close the door and say, you know, is everything okay? And because I had been really open and vulnerable, it created the space for people to reciprocate. So
I think of all things, you know, it's really interesting. Human beings need connection. I mean, that was a big lesson from COVID, right?
Yeah.
The disconnection. And it's funny, it's very hard to connect with something that's perfect. It just, there's nothing to connect to. It's not human. And so I think if we can open up these spaces and I'll actually tell one other story I should share. So we were part of a men's group actually, and we've had some pretty vulnerable, awesome moments. I got to say those meetings have been really something. The original one that I did was with a buddy in LA who I met at my first men's conference. And he's like, I'm going to get some guys together. Let's try this. And I said, great. So he goes, yeah, come on down to LA. Let's do it. We're in Malibu. He bought a bunch of really cool guys out, entrepreneur, gym owner, this. And I swear to God, within 10 minutes, 5 of the 7 guys were crying. Because like us, our dads had beaten us up or told us we were shit or whatever, or divorce or bad behavior. And we started to have this incredible bond. And so interestingly, sadly, the guy I organized it with passed away from cancer. Mm. When I went to the funeral, I'd only met these guys once in my entire life. all of them came up and just went, Dave. And they went like, we still meet every month.
Yeah.
If you can create a small group of men to vulnerably share, there's something weird that just clicks. Yeah. You know, there's a click that men don't naturally do that. You have to make the effort. But these guys met every month for like 4 or 5 years, and they were so overwhelmed with being happy about it and being human as well. Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's a powerful story. And, you know, I think there's a lot of layers, and there's a lot of protection, and depending on, you know, how you were raised and your environment and everything that happened in your life, some people have some pretty thick armor, and to be able to open up is tough. It's tough. Tough. It's tough for men because it's been associated with weakness.
Exactly.
Right.
Was it Brené Brown, I think, who talks a lot about vulnerability and how to connect.
Absolutely.
She's amazing at vulnerability. So anyone, if you want to look up Brené Brown, she's got multiple podcasts on that.
Yeah.
She's certainly going to do a better
TED
job
talks,
than we will.
Yeah.
Some great TED Talks. Like, that's a great, thanks for bringing that up. Yeah. That's a great place to go.
I think
as well.
Actually, if I'm not mistaken, I think one of her books is called The Power of Vulnerability.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, if you look now at the latest and the top notch, kind of books around the best leaders around the world, and yes, women and men, there's authenticity and vulnerability. Like those are the two most important things, and it's really it is changing. I'm really hopeful actually that this is going to bring a lot of change.
You know, it's funny you read my mind, because I was going to pivot for the last bit of the podcast into work and vulnerability. Because one of the things that came to me recently that I realized is if we're going to truly change the way we live or the world, most people spend at least half their waking hours at work. So if you don't make changes at work, the changes will never happen. So, you know, this heart-based leadership, I've looked at it in my company. I've incorporated some of it. For example, we told people like, look, if you're just not feeling right one day, take a day. It's exactly the same as having a cold, like no worries. And, you know, I'll just share one other thing. So I mentioned I run anxious a little bit, right? So we had a client issue. One of my employees had a bit of a problem, and we were going through a period that was tough, and I kind of did freak out a bit, and I just, I kind of threw her under the bus. I didn't think I was. In my mind, I was protecting the company, protecting the client, doing everything right. But, you know, I have an amazing COO who, like she said, culture's everything. We're not doing that. And actually, you know, I started to step back from my business shortly after this, because I realized, like, for us to go into the next level of leadership, that she was probably better at it than I was. But when I went back to the team, I did make the decision to just be vulnerable about it and say, like, I betrayed you guys and I made a big mistake, and I am an emotional person. I did cry. But Christian, what I want to ask you is, as a leader, what does that leadership look like? What does vulnerable leadership look like? And how do you balance it? Because I do know they appreciated it. I did get a lot of great feedback, but I don't think they want me crying like every 2 days.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
how
do you balance that? Like, how do you see heart-based or vulnerable-based leadership?
Well, I think there is some kind of distinction between vulnerability, authenticity, and the emotional, like the emotion, you know? Okay. So I don't know what the circumstances were in the example, but let's talk about that example, because you talked about it. And maybe you did the right intervention. Maybe it would have been better to do it maybe the next day.
Right.
Or right where you're in, okay, I've kind of calmed down. And because I think maybe not the world control of your emotions. Control is too strong, because we're human beings and you need to be able to. And so I think if you did that.
Yeah.
You did it. And so now you kind of know, and you kind of go, okay, I can do these types of interventions, and maybe I kind of gauge my moment and I check in with my emotions. Because, but sometimes there are circumstances where crying is actually, it's just, this is what the group needs, right? Or yeah, to sure. So anyway, so sure. There's a sure. But I think, you know, it starts with, you know, what kind of values, like what are you trying to create? What's the culture? What are the values? And then you need to live the your values. And so that means that I love your COO intervention, like, no, we don't do that, right? So you need, and different circumstances will require different types of interventions.
Yeah.
If you see something happening in a meeting, you need to be able to call it. Now, in certain circumstances, I might say, hey, you know, that's not the kind of behavior we want to have. Yeah. This is not the way we do things.
Yeah.
Or I might use humor to kind of, to but you want to find a way to call it. Or I'll wait until the last meeting, the meeting is done, and I'll say, can you stay behind and say, okay, I let it go because I didn't want to call you out in front of everybody on this, but, you know, this is a warning number one and final warning. Like, I don't want to see this. If you can find a way to do it with the group so that they know, right? So there's different types of recipes, but it's what's your culture? What are your values? And how do you implement it? And how do you make sure that if somebody goes astray, that you kind of bring them back?
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I think people confuse in business is when they get on these kinds of movements into vulnerable leadership, heart-based leadership, is that they think that accountability does go with it. There's still accountability.
Yeah. You know, that has nothing to do
with it.
Absolute accountability. Yeah. And I would say, like, authenticity, vulnerability.
Accountability,
yeah. Right?
Yeah.
That needs to all come in. And business results. And, you know, if we're not delivering on the business and everybody's happy, the thing is, we're not going to have a place to be happy, right? So we need to, so it doesn't,
there's a balance. Yeah.
Courageous conversations, you know, telling it like it is, calling bad behavior. These things need to exist. They're not, it's not a kumbaya culture, right?
Yeah.
So.
But it is a culture. What I would say is it's a culture where you are allowed to be human. You are allowed to have feelings. You are allowed to express yourself.
Yeah.
You know, but I do like the idea, and I want to capture that. Like, still, it's an accountable place.
It is an accountable. And you know, and allowing the space for people to make mistakes. So so people will say, oh, we've got this great culture and all that. And like, if somebody screws up, we're like, you know. Yeah. But no. So you need to be able, people need to be able to try things, to fail. And that's all part of that that culture.
Yeah, what that gets into, and I'll tell you from my own personal experience, what I realized was I'm like, oh, frick, I made a decision out of fear.
Mm.
And decisions out of fear usually aren't great.
Yeah.
Right? And so it was a chance for me to grow. That's what I shared with my team. I go, oh. And actually, I might have made the same decision, but it was all in the journey. I would have involved that person in and explained the situation. Yeah. And I've learned shared decision-making sometimes can really help people to feel inclusive and those kinds of things. So, yeah. Cool, man. Well, wow. What an episode. Any last questions, Manny, for you, for Christian?
I think it's inspiring, and I'm happy we get to have these stories. I'll probably keep you a very long time here, Christian, with more questions. I don't want to do that necessarily, but hopefully maybe eventually another episode with other subjects. I don't know if Dave, you had another question that you wanted.
I think there's a few things, but I there's a lot of things I could say, and I feel like we'll move some of this into a future episode, which is about dealing with your own, we talked about an earlier episode, you know, when people say they're anxious, I always ask them, I'm like, well, how do you, are you sure you're not excited? Because it's the same feeling.
Yeah.
It's an interpretation.
Yeah.
And so we get into, and I hope you tune in. We're going to do some pretty cool subconscious pattern podcast and things like that. But I want to leave with something that happened between you and I that was pretty touching for me. I was talking to you passionately about vulnerability and connection and about men's issues as I was getting ready to do this. And you and I were talking, and I said, you know, like, we all want love, but like, how many times do we get, like, to our buddies, you know, we're men, right? But how many times do we say, I love you, to our buddies? And right away, you go, I love you, man.
Yeah. So I called you on it.
You're right away, you just go, I love you, man.
Yeah.
And I want to say, like, I love you too, man.
I love you too, and I love you, man. And Listen, I think what you're doing is great. I think it's that's what needs to happen is different forums, different platforms to have these conversations and, you know, one conversation at a time.
Absolutely, man. Well, thank you so much for
joining us. Thank you for being guys, it's by the way, pleasure. This is, usually it's breakfast, this is a supper, but we want to hear your stories. So we'll have the email in the description. So you'll have the comments if you want to write something. We want to involve, again, everyone around this discussion. So let's just not end this as one conversation, but rather a conversation that's going to keep on going and sharing around the, hopefully around the world.
If we get lucky, I mean, who, God willing. But I will say it would be great if some people had a chance to use this forum and this episode as a chance to share. And absolutely. Christian, your bravery and your ability and courage to share, I've always admired. And just thank you so much for joining us. And Manny, thanks again, bud.
Thanks, Christian.
All right.
We'll see you.
We're out.
Gentlemen. See you guys.
Thanks.